In our hyper-connected, option-saturated world, we face a peculiar paradox. Despite having more leisure time than previous generations, roughly 5 hours daily for most people, we feel chronically time-poor. James Wallman's groundbreaking book introduces experience intelligence as our salvation, a framework for making wiser choices about our most precious resource, time. This isn't just another self-help concept, it's a science-backed approach that's captured attention from Silicon Valley executives to Hollywood celebrities. Oprah Winfrey featured Wallman's ideas in her magazine, calling them transformative wisdom for our distracted age. The book's cultural impact extends beyond individual readers. Companies like Google and Airbnb have incorporated its principles into their employee wellness programs. At its core lies a profound question. If we could erase our worst memories, would we? The answer reveals the complex relationship between experience, memory, and meaning that forms the foundation of a well-lived life. Despite having more leisure time than previous generations, we experience a pervasive sense of time scarcity. This paradox stems from 7 modern phenomena that have fundamentally altered our relationship with time. First, rising incomes have increased the opportunity cost of leisure. Watching your child's game feels expensive when you could be earning money. Second, busyness has become a status symbol, with people sending emails at odd hours to appear important. Third, we're drowning in digital communications that fragment our attention and create a constant sense of urgency. Fourth, we face an overwhelming ocean of possibilities, both online and offline, creating decision fatigue and anxiety about missing out. Fifth, multitasking has created what researchers call contaminated time, hours that are neither fully productive nor truly restorative. Sixth, our smartphones consume over 60% of our leisure time, leaving just 2 hours of screen-free time daily. Finally, our education system prioritizes work skills over leisure skills, treating the latter as frivolous despite their critical importance to well-being. This time poverty isn't just a perception problem. It has real consequences for our health and happiness. Just as we've become conscious about avoiding junk food in favor of nutritious options, we need similar discernment about how we spend our time. Some experiences, like excessive TV watching or mindless social media scrolling, act as junk experiences that erode our happiness and health. Others function as empty experiences, providing momentary distraction without any lasting value. The stakes couldn't be higher. As Roman poet Catullus described life as brevis lux, brief light, before eternal darkness, how we spend our limited time represents life's most important skill. The STORIES framework offers a science-based approach to making these crucial decisions, helping us avoid wasting our short time gathering mediocre memories or lying on our deathbed wondering what might have been. Our understanding of success has evolved dramatically through 5 historical phases. In ancient times, success came through Job's divine blessing, prosperity as evidence of God's favor. Later, during Louis XIV's reign, success depended on court favors and social connections. The Industrial Age brought IQ-driven success, where intelligence determined achievement. Bill Clinton's era introduced emotional intelligence as the key differentiator between good and great leaders. Today, we've reached the 5th phase, the recognition that happiness precedes success, not the other way around. Research by psychologists like Sonia Lyomomirsky and Sean Aker demonstrates that happiness leads to success across multiple domains: work performance, income, marriage quality, and health. Meanwhile, separate studies show that experiences lead to happiness more reliably than material possessions. This creates a powerful chain: experiences, happiness, success. Additionally, experiences build resilience, the ability to bounce back from difficulties, which the American Psychological Association identifies as crucial for success in today's volatile world. Experiences like playing tennis, kite surfing, or joining a book club develop what psychologist Anne Mastin calls the ordinary magic of resilience. The modern definition of success has thus expanded beyond material wealth to include happiness and resilience. For most of human history, success meant survival and reproduction. In the 20th century, it became tied to materialistic consumerism, the big job, house, and car. Now we're moving toward a more holistic view, where the best success includes happiness and the best happiness includes success. Since both can be fleeting, resilience becomes the third essential ingredient. This evolution makes experience intelligence, XQ, as critical as IQ and emotional intelligence for living well. The STORIES checklist, story, transformation, outside and offline, relationships, intensity, extraordinary, status and significance, provides a framework for making better decisions about how we spend our time, not as rigid rules, but as guiding principles that, when combined, lead to more meaningful, resilient lives. Kurt Vonnegut once demonstrated a remarkable theory. All stories follow predictable patterns that can be graphically represented. Using a GI axis, good fortune, ill fortune, and a BE axis, beginning, end, he illustrated the universally appealing man-in-whole story structure, where someone gets into trouble and then gets out of it. This pattern isn't just entertaining, it's fundamental to how we process life experiences and find meaning. Around the same time Vonnegut's thesis on story shapes was rejected by the University of Chicago, Joseph Campbell was discovering similar patterns across global mythologies. Despite different local details in stories from Celts, Jews, Greeks, Romans, Egyptians, or indigenous peoples worldwide, all these narratives follow the same underlying pattern, the hero's journey. This universal structure begins in the ordinary world. Then something disrupts this world, a call to adventure that the hero eventually accepts. They cross into an unknown realm, facing tests and trials, making allies and enemies along the way. After conquering the supreme ordeal against the ultimate adversary, the hero receives a reward and returns home transformed, changing their world forever. This pattern appears across cultures because story itself is our evolutionary adaptation, the collective fictions that separate humans from other animals and enable our unprecedented cooperation. Unlike other animals, humans create collective fictions, complex, shared stories that enable massive cooperation. As Yuval Noah Harari puts it, you could never convince a monkey to give you a banana by promising him limitless bananas in monkey heaven. These stories allowed our ancestors to build pyramids, invent money, establish laws, and create thriving societies. We develop through three levels of personal storytelling. First, as actors, simply reacting in the moment like children. Then, as agents, becoming aware of our past and future like teenagers. And finally, as authors, consciously directing our life stories. These personal narratives provide unity, purpose, and meaning, essential for achieving what Aristotle called eudaimonia, a deeper form of happiness. For a story to endure, it needs two essential ingredients, resonance and a positive ending. Stories with redemptive patterns, where negative events turn positive, mirror the man-in-whole structure and correlate with greater happiness, while contamination stories, where good turns bad, correlate with depression. When we frame our personal narratives as redemptive journeys rather than contaminated ones, we become happier and more resilient, seeing obstacles as opportunities rather than defeats. Being a hero doesn't require supernatural powers, just following the mud map of the hero's journey. By viewing life through this lens, we transform everyday challenges into meaningful tests, seeing failures not as dead ends, but as necessary trials that build character and skills. This approach makes experiences more meaningful and life more satisfying. Bruce Jenner's 1976 Olympic decathlon victory represented more than athletic achievement. It embodied the American dream of personal transformation. Through grueling training and competition across 10 events, Jenner transformed from a 10th place finisher to world's greatest athlete. This journey exemplifies our universal desire for growth and self-actualization. Most modern societies embrace some version of this transformative ideal, the belief that we can improve ourselves, develop our potential, and create better lives. This concept aligns with ancient philosophical traditions like those of Aristotle and Confucius, as well as modern psychological frameworks from Keyes, Dessey and Ryan, Seligman, Reif, and Maslow, all of which position personal growth as essential for fulfillment. We tend to underestimate how much will change in the coming decade, what psychologist Dan Gilbert calls the end of history illusion. This leads us to believe we're the finished article when we're not. The key question isn't whether we'll change, but what type of change is best. Two pathways exist: disruptive transformation, when starting from desperation, or incremental change, when starting from inspiration. Whether major or minor, transformation is vital for happiness because it reduces compromises and helps us achieve our fullest development. For those wondering if there's still room for relaxation in a transformation-focused life, the 3 degrees of transformation framework offers guidance. Fly and flop, passive relaxation under blue skies, find and seek, active exploration like sightseeing or hiking, and go and become, personal growth through learning new skills or seeking deeper change. The best trips, and indeed the best use of free time generally, incorporate all 3 elements. This framework applies not just to vacations, but to everyday leisure. You can flop in front of the TV, seek new experiences at a comedy club, or become a better version of yourself through yoga or community service. Even reading offers all 3 transformational degrees: entertainment, imaginative travel, and thought provocation. The key is balancing these elements to create a life that includes both comfort and growth, relaxation and challenge. Being outside, particularly by the seaside, in forests or other natural settings, makes us happier and healthier. 4 key scientific explanations support this: biophilia, our evolutionary connection to natural environments; relief from environmental bads like noise and air pollution; phytoncides, beneficial compounds emitted by trees; and the physical benefits of movement in outdoor spaces. The story of Jerry Morris illustrates this connection. In the 1960s, Morris became the first person to run on Hampstead Heath and pioneered research showing the link between physical activity and heart health. Through groundbreaking studies of London bus conductors who climbed 500 to 750 stairs daily versus sedentary drivers and active postmen versus desk-bound postal workers, Morris demonstrated that physical activity cut heart attack risk in half. His research launched the modern exercise movement and influenced his own longevity. He lived to 99, swimming daily until age 97. While the exact long-term relationship between exercise and happiness remains somewhat unclear, is it a bi-directional feedback loop? The short-term mood benefits are undeniable. Research shows we're happiest in nature, particularly near water. In fact, the happiness difference between coastal and urban environments equals the difference between visiting an exhibition and cleaning the bathroom. Equally important is disconnecting from digital devices. Steve Jobs famously limited his children's technology use, understanding the dangers firsthand. This reveals a profound disconnect between tech creators and their personal choices. When asked if his children loved the iPad, Jobs replied, "They haven't used it. We limit how much technology our kids use at home." Many tech insiders, from Twitter's founder to former Wired editors, similarly restrict their children's screen time precisely because they understand the addictive mechanisms built into these products. These mechanisms are deliberately designed. BJ Fogg's Persuasive Technology Lab at Stanford trained many tech leaders who went on to design habit-forming products using operant conditioning principles, the same psychological mechanism that makes gambling so addictive. Tristan Harris, a former Google employee turned digital ethics whistleblower, warns about the weapons of mass distraction we carry in our pockets. The consequences are alarming. 80% check phones within 15 minutes of waking. The average person checks 150 times daily, extreme users 300 times, and most office emails are answered within 6 seconds. Most shockingly, research from the University of Virginia reveals 1 in 10 people check their phones during sex. To combat this addiction, 7 practical strategies can help. 1. Go cold turkey. Completely disconnect to break addiction patterns. 2. Let it sleep. Make bedrooms phone-free zones. 3. Fly more. Use airplane mode regularly. 4. Just say no to notifications. Turn them off and check devices only during designated times. 5. Try the 5-2 detox diet. Take 2 days off devices weekly. 6. Leave it out. Occasionally venture into the world without your phone. And lock it in. Designate a specific place to store your phone at home. Marina Keegan, a talented Yale graduate who died in a car accident shortly after graduation, wrote a viral essay about the opposite of loneliness, that feeling of connection, community, and belonging we all crave. Her words captured our fundamental human need for connection, explaining not just what we want in life, but what we need for survival. This need is illustrated by the story of an elderly couple who called emergency services not for medical help, but for human connection. Police officer Stuart Ockwell responded by simply spending time with 95-year-old Fred Thompson and his wife, listening to their stories. This seemingly small act of kindness may have been life-saving, as research shows loneliness is literally deadly, putting the body in a permanent fight-or-flight state, increasing stress hormones, raising blood pressure, weakening the immune system, and making people more vulnerable to heart attacks, strokes, dementia, and cancer. Studies reveal that social isolation, loneliness, and living alone increase death risk by 26% to 32%, making loneliness more dangerous than smoking 15 cigarettes daily. Loneliness isn't just an elderly problem, it's widespread across all age groups. 1 in 5 British adults report feeling lonely often, 1 in 4 Australians admit to loneliness, and 1/3 of Americans over 45 describe themselves as chronically lonely. Loneliness shouldn't be viewed as shameful, but as a biological signal similar to hunger or thirst, an evolutionary prompt telling us to seek connection with others. The simplest advice for combating loneliness is deceptively powerful. Do something, anything. Experiences create happiness through 3 mechanisms. They often involve others, they provide identity and belonging, and they give us stories to share. Even solitary activities connect us to communities of like-minded people. The Harvard study of adult development confirms that good relationships keep us happier and healthier, period. When choosing activities, opt for those that enhance relationships and consider joining groups related to your interests, running clubs, yoga classes, book clubs, to strengthen social connections. Research by psychologists Nicholas Epley and Juliana Schroeder reveals a counterintuitive truth. While most people believe solitude during commutes is preferable, those who engage with strangers actually enjoy their journeys more. We consistently underestimate others' willingness to connect. Breaking the ice with simple greetings or personal questions can create meaningful moments of connection that combat loneliness and enhance well-being. Our typical fantasy of the good life, lounging around with our feet up, is fundamentally mistaken. Humans are actually happier when fully engaged in intensely difficult challenges that focus all our energy. This state of flow, discovered by psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, occurs when someone's mind and body are completely engaged in a challenging but manageable activity. Csikszentmihalyi, frustrated with behaviorism's focus on external observations while ignoring subjective experience, pioneered a revolutionary approach to studying happiness. Using pagers to collect real-time data about people's feelings, he discovered that, contrary to popular belief, people are happiest not when relaxing, but when intensely focused on challenging activities. Through thousands of interviews, he identified 8 elements of flow: a challenging but manageable activity, full body awareness, clear goals, immediate feedback, immersive focus, the paradox of control, being at the edge of one's abilities, loss of self-consciousness followed by an expanded sense of self afterward, and an altered perception of time. Flow researchers have expanded on Csikszentmihalyi's work, discovering that social interaction enhances flow states. Charles Walker created a hierarchy. Solitary flow, like solo running, is good. Coactive flow, exercising with friends, is better, and interactive flow, team sports, playing music together, is best. Stephen Kotler, founder of the Flow Genome Project, suggests finding rich environments offering novelty, unpredictability, and complexity combined with some form of risk, creative, emotional, social, or physical. It's crucial to distinguish between real flow and fake flow. Real flow requires intense struggle with worthwhile challenges and leaves you feeling expanded afterward. I came, I saw, I lived. While fake flow from gambling machines and phones requires minimal effort and leaves you feeling depleted. The same psychological principle, intermittent variable rewards, powers both slot machines and our smartphone habits. This explains why 59% of Britons admit being hooked on their devices, with many spending 40 to 60% of leisure time on screens. The beauty of flow is that it's available to anyone willing to put down distractions, accept risk, and embrace intense struggles as an essential part of a well-lived life. The key isn't what we do, but how we do it, putting all our focus into the present moment. This approach transforms ordinary activities into extraordinary experiences, creating the kind of engagement that leads to lasting satisfaction. Our memories work through snapshots rather than perfect recordings. According to the peak end rule, people remember experiences based primarily on their most intense moments, peaks, and how they concluded, endings, rather than the average of all moments or the duration. This creates a tension between the experiencing self, who lives through events, and the remembering self, who constructs the narrative afterward, often with rose-tinted glasses that obscure less pleasant aspects. This principle was demonstrated through cold water experiments, where participants preferred longer discomfort that ended more pleasantly over shorter total discomfort, showing that endings disproportionately influence memory. Similar findings emerged from colonoscopy studies and simulated queuing experiments. People's overall evaluation depended heavily on how experiences concluded. For longer experiences, like vacations, research by Simon Kemp shows that the peak end rule needs refinement. His experiments revealed that holiday duration doesn't affect happiness. 4 days can provide equal satisfaction to 2 weeks. People's memories are highly selective, and beginnings matter as much as endings. This suggests we should take shorter, more frequent holidays rather than fewer extended ones, and focus on creating multiple memorable moments throughout an experience rather than just one peak moment. To create peak experiences, focus on 3 key elements: flow, previously discussed, awe, and novelty. Trying new things is essential for happiness. It maximizes positive emotions, minimizes negative ones, and builds protective memory assets. Novel experiences help avoid the hedonic treadmill, where familiar activities lose their appeal. They expand our sense of self, release dopamine, strengthen neural connections, stimulate creativity, and satisfy our innate curiosity. Equally important are awe-inducing activities, from spiritual practices to experiencing big nature like mountains or oceans, which diminish ego and foster transcendental awareness of our place in the universe. Beginnings deserve special attention as they bridge anticipation and reality. The before, anticipating self, the during, experiencing self, and the after, remembering self, each play important roles in our experience. Anticipation provides free happiness, making experiences superior to material goods. The beginning marks the crucial transition from fantasy to reality, when our brain compares expectations with actuality. For endings, draw on the ancient explore and exploit pattern of our hunter-gatherer ancestors. Begin with exploration and novelty, then conclude by revisiting favorites. On vacation, this might mean trying new restaurants initially, but returning to a beloved spot on the final night, completing the hero's journey by returning to the familiar with new perspective. While extraordinary experiences are vital for happiness, ordinary moments, walks with friends, tea with family, or early bedtimes, are equally important. Research confirms that happiness requires enjoying ordinary experiences. Indeed, little everyday pleasures, a stranger's smile, favorite music, sunlight through trees, often bring the most joy. The ideal approach balances extraordinary and ordinary moments, using the new peak-end rules to satisfy both our experiencing and remembering selves. Status profoundly affects our health, happiness, and longevity. Sir Michael Marmot's groundbreaking research on British civil servants revealed a clear social gradient to health. Those higher on the social ladder live longer and report greater happiness. Despite our cultural awkwardness about openly pursuing status, the evidence is clear that it benefits well-being as much as other health-promoting behaviors like exercise or eating vegetables. Education, money, and power are traditional pathways to status, with education showing the strongest correlation with longevity. Economist Amartya Sen explains that status benefits come through three essential factors for human flourishing: control, capabilities, and social participation. While Marmot argues status is primary, defining the experiences we have, experiences themselves can lead to higher status. However, not all status is created equal. The contrasting stories of two self-made millionaires reveal a crucial distinction. Marcus Persson, creator of Minecraft, became a billionaire but ended up divorced and isolated despite his wealth. Meanwhile, Madam C.J. Walker, born to former slaves in 1867, orphaned at 7, married at 14, and widowed at 20, built a hair care empire that employed over 20,000 people. By her death in 1919, she had amassed a fortune of around $1 million, becoming America's first female self-made millionaire. Unlike Persson, Walker used her success to elevate others, paying her female agents well, hiring black professionals, and donating generously to civil rights causes. This distinction reveals the difference between empty status and true significance. Status can be empty when self-oriented, but meaningful when it serves others. Significance is self- and other-oriented, connecting rather than disconnecting us from others. The path from status to significance transforms success from something embarrassing into something we can proudly pursue. Research confirms this principle. Psychologists Liz Dunn and Mike Norton found that spending money on others rather than yourself increases happiness, regardless of wealth or culture. More recent studies by Cassie Mogulner and colleagues reveal that giving time, despite our feelings of time scarcity, actually makes people feel more time abundant. Giving creates a virtuous circle where the happiness from giving encourages more giving, leading to greater happiness. Five routes to higher status with significance include pursuing education, getting involved in communities and taking control, creating stories through unique experiences like immersive theater or transformative travel, improving physical fitness, and watching less television, which correlates with lower status positions. By focusing on significance rather than empty status, we can achieve the kind of success that brings lasting satisfaction and contributes to the well-being of others. Warren Sussman, an unconventional cultural historian at Rutgers, traced America's shift from a culture of character to a culture of personality as people moved from rural communities to anonymous cities. In the 19th century, people valued internal qualities like citizenship, duty, integrity, and morals. By the 20th century, they focused on external appearances, being fascinating, attractive, and magnetic. This shift aligned with rising materialism and consumerism, where happiness and identity became external commodities rather than internal qualities. Now, in the 21st century, we're moving from materialism toward experientialism, seeking fulfillment through experiences rather than possessions. This shift isn't just personal, it has profound implications for society. Adopting experientialism collectively could address major environmental problems by reducing consumption, improve happiness by focusing on what truly matters, and blur status differences that drive inequality. Unlike material goods, experiences are uniquely personal and less subject to status comparison. When asked if they'd swap a 3-star holiday for a 5-star one, people are surprisingly reluctant. Their experiences feel like part of their identity in a way possessions never do. This suggests that shifting cultural focus from materialism to experiences could reduce status anxiety, particularly benefiting poorer people who currently spend disproportionately trying to keep up with consumerism. To transform the stories checklist into a lasting habit, use B.J. Fogg's Tiny Habits formula. After I existing behavior, I will ask, will this experience lead to stories? Keep it simple at first. This minimal action is like doing just 2 push-ups after using the bathroom. Once this becomes automatic, you can expand to ask about each element. Story: will this give me a meaningful narrative? Transformation: will I grow? Outside and offline: will this take me away from screens? Relationships: will this connect me to others? Intensity: will this create flow? Extraordinary: will this be novel and awesome? And status and significance: will this raise my standing and help me matter? By consistently applying these science-backed principles, we can waste less time on empty experiences and create more extraordinary memories. The result isn't just better individual lives, but potentially a new cultural revolution, a digitally mediated culture of character focused on developing resilience and genuine identity through meaningful experiences rather than empty consumption.